The next portion of our program is with Ms. Bonnie Boomer. She's going to be speaking today on employment now and into the future. Employment during COVID.
Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living. Barely getting by, it's all taking and no giving.
I'm taking what they're giving because I'm working for a living.
Work hard, play hard.
Hard working man.
Lord, I'm so tired. How long can this go on?
Everybody's working for the weekend.
Thank God it's
Friday. On a Sunday afternoon.
By way of introduction, my name is Bonnie Boomer, and I have the German name, so it has only one O. I am a disability rights advocate with Indiana Disability Rights. We had a brand change about 5-6 years ago, and I still slip into the old iPass thing. Indiana Disability Rights is a federally mandated program that encourages and advocates for people with disabilities in all kinds of areas, including housing, education, access to buildings. We advocate for people, of course, in employment, and that's what I'm here to talk about. The PNA system, the Protection and Advocacy System, is the organization I work for. There's a protection and advocacy agency in every state. Everybody has one. Most people don't know they have them, but we're here to help. And we're here based on some things that happened in the 70s. As you probably remember, many of you may remember, some of you may be too young to remember, a guy by the name of Geraldo Rivera. He was a reporter who went into an institution called Willowbrook. And there he discovered that there was enormous, just unbelievable abuse and neglect of people with developmental disabilities. That prompted the development of some congressional action. The Kennedy family was very involved in this. They developed legislation to protect and uphold the rights of people with disabilities, starting with developmental disabilities and later expanding on to people with traumatic brain injury, people who need access to assistive technology, voting rights, and all kinds of stuff. So I'm part of the employment team. I've been with actually been an advocate for about 20 years. I like to brag. And I'm the head of the employment team as far as the advocates go. We have each team has an advocate or two or three and an attorney that leads the team. My job is basically to try to informally navigate and negotiate for people to get the services and supports they need. Some of the things that I work with, and you all might probably know what vocational rehab services is. If you don't, I'm sure you're going to find out. I know that some of you folks know VR. And I'm an advocate that helps people with navigating the VR system. We also handle cases that involve employment issues, access to accommodations on the workplace. And I'm going to go a little more into that in a few minutes. One of the things I wanted to talk about was COVID. How did that affect people with blindness and other disabilities? The statistics are, I believe, about 70% of people without disabilities are employed. About 33% of people with disabilities have employment, are involved in employment. So there's a large disparity there. When COVID struck, almost 1 million people with disabilities lost their jobs. It was a very difficult situation. And although some things have come out of it that are highly interesting, we saw a lot of people lose their jobs that were in the food industry, in hotels, in types of employment that were service-based and customer-based, in which people interacted with people, and then all of a sudden these places shut down. So all this interaction stopped, all this service stopped. Everybody was in limbo, remember, for about 3 months there, and some of us still are not working in the office. So I'm going to segue into reasonable accommodations because, interestingly enough, a lot of the cases that we've seen come in over the past 6 months have been reasonable accommodations. An employer decides this particular client or this particular individual can't wear a mask. They got to go. There's no interactive process. They just got to go. So in backing up a little bit, most of the information, I don't want to call it legal because I'm not an attorney. I can't give legal advice. But most of the rules for employers are based on the Americans with Disabilities Act, Title I. And Title I ensures that people with disabilities who are qualified for the jobs are able to get those jobs. So one of the ways that you can kind of level the playing field so that you can be employed is by requesting reasonable accommodations. And accommodations can be things like assistive technology, the speech to text, devices that we're so familiar with. Cell phones. There's also variable schedules. So maybe you don't come to work from 9 to 5. Maybe you come to work from 10 to 6, or maybe you switch your hours, or you work something out. A lot of us are telecommuting, working from home. I think it's like the best thing since sliced bread, man. I love working from home. I can do everything I can do from the office, and I can do it at home because I have the setup here. I have all the assistive tech I need. Sometimes job sharing can be used. Sometimes, I said variable schedules, and I said job sharing. One of the things that was interesting about job sharing is my daughter works for the state, and she worked in the downtown office, and the office closed. Of course, everybody was telecommuting, and then they started bringing people back gradually. She still couldn't telecommute because buses weren't running on a good schedule, and she couldn't get to work on time and get there easily. So what they did was allowed other people to come in and work in the office. And then she shared duties that they couldn't do it, or they could do in the office, but she would share duties that at home until she was able to go in the office. So, I mean, it was a balancing act. They shared responsibilities and traded off jobs. Some of the situations we've seen, like I mentioned, the masks, sometimes we're sitting down and working those things out. But we have run into situations where individuals couldn't be around hand sanitizers. They were so allergic that they had, breathing problems just being exposed to sanitizers. Some of these accommodations, like not being able to use hand sanitizer, wasn't an option because it was required. They had to use hand sanitizer. That was a situation we couldn't help. I really feel bad about it, but that was a situation that we could not come up with a reasonable accommodation that didn't involve some type of cleaning solution. We've encouraged people, and we've done this with folks. We've helped them write letters requesting accommodations, and those letters are written to the employer. We suggest writing things because we think that there's a paper trail that way. I worked with attorneys for a long time, can't help it. I think that there's a paper trail. I always request accommodations in writing, and I basically explain what the job is that I do, who I am, what the job is, what kind of accommodation I need, and what type of essential function that this accommodation will help with. I'm dating myself, but back in about 1990, I went to a job interview with it was a professional level job. I was talking to 3 doctors, PhDs, and they were asking me about whether I was qualified to do this particular job, which involved case management, going to elderly people's homes. And I said, sure, I'm qualified. I've got the ability to do the job. I have the assistive technology. And they said, well, how are you going to get to people's houses? Well, I hire drivers. And they said, we're sorry, we can't give you the job because you can't drive yourself. Then the ADA came along, and they don't do that anymore too much in my interviews. I've hired drivers for, like, dating myself, 30 years, and done it well and succeeded in jobs. You do have to be able to do the essential functions of the job with or without accommodations. And anytime you have questions, let me know. Unfortunately, I can't see the icons to see if the hands are raised. So I'm going to ask someone to help me with that because, I don't want to just be a talking head. I like to be a little interactive. So I've worked, as I said, during the pandemic from home almost the entire time. I started going into work a few weeks ago, and I'm able to do both. I'm able to work from home and to work from the office. And like I said, I kind of went through this without my notes. I'm trying to think if there's other information. The employers do have the option of denying an accommodation, and those are the situations in which it's either an undue hardship or it alters the fundamental way that the organization is run. So in the case of the person that was using the hand, could not use the hand sanitizer, it was a major alteration of the way the job had to be done, and they could not change that. I think somebody's hand is up, and I'm not sure.
You have a question from 5529.
Yes.
All right. Yes, I do. So thank you so much for joining us today. And the question, this is Lee Chicka, by the way. You can also call me Sai to make things easier. I guess the question I want to ask is, what is the most recent piece of legislation or most recent action, I guess, that the Indiana Disability Rights has been involved with?
Whoa, we do a lot. A lot of the stuff that I do, because I am not an attorney, most of what I do is informal advocacy. And that's where I either go in and help the individual advocate for the services they need, or we give the individual the information they need to self-advocate. That's pretty much what I do. Our attorneys do some litigation. And because of confidentiality issues, I can't really go into the nature of that, but there are some sort of, well, we had a case a few years ago with against an Indiana Department of Corrections. And in that particular case, it was because individuals were not receiving treatment for mental health conditions. They were being isolated and denied their medication. So we had to take action there. In employment cases, we have helped people get to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, EEOC, and file complaints. We've helped them go through that process. We've done some mediations in which before it actually goes to a trial, the parties agree to mediate and they sit down and they work out a settlement. In a few cases, we've had to file through, or the attorneys have filed federal or state lawsuits. And like I said, that's not the stuff I do. My favorite thing is to figure out each side's story and then try to find out what their mutual goals are, and then get them together talking and working on a mutual settlement. I joke that I have a magic wand in the bottom drawer of my desk and I pull it out once or twice a week. But what I do is basically just get people talking and thinking about the problem and doing some problem solving. That was a good question. Thank you. Any others? As I was saying, that an employer can refuse to provide an accommodation, but it either has to be a fundamental alteration of the organization's business, or it has to be an undue hardship. In other words, it's a real small organization and it's a real high ticket accommodation, and they might not be able to afford it, or they might not be able to figure out how to get it. Sometimes the situations are they just don't know what is needed and how to get about that, to go about getting that accommodation. One of my favorite resources is the Job Accommodation Network, which is through the Department of Labor and Disability. I believe it's connected with DOL. I just know it is askjan.gov. I believe it is. It was in the bottom of my presentation. I did send that to Michael Lauf, and hopefully that can be posted. But Ask Jan is like my favorite go-to for information on accommodations, not just for people who are blind, but for people who are deaf, people who have chemical sensitivities, people who have mobility issues, and they list everything out. It's beautiful. And they will also, if you contact them and ask a question, they will provide you information that you can share with the individual and the employer. So it's a very handy resource. We do use the EEOC website. They have a lot of information available about accommodations and workplace and rights. And I use the worktoinclude.org, I believe it is. Work to Include is an Indiana coalition of individuals with disabilities and professionals who are working to help people with disabilities obtain jobs that are community-based, integrated, and paid at reasonable levels. Not sure what else I can say here. Any other questions?
There are no hands raised.
Okay. You know, one of the challenges is when you get a little older, your memory isn't quite as sharp as it used to be. My daughter's in here with me and she's going, I'm trying to help mom, but I can't remember either. we've had a lot of some of the cases that we do, a lot of what I do is work with people that are having challenges either getting services from vocational rehabilitation services, maybe their case got closed, or they are not quite on the same page as the counselor. The counselor's thinking they want to be a veterinarian, and the person wants to do cake decorating. I don't know. But every now and then we have individuals where the counselor and the client are just absolutely not on the same page, and we sit down with them and help them kind of work that out.
We do have a question from 3231.
Sure.
Hi, Bonnie. Thanks so much. Is there ever a time where you guys will send an actual, like, an appreciation to some companies who have done above and beyond? Because I work for a company that has done exactly that here. I'm actually living in Minnesota now, but I work for a company that has gone above and beyond to make me feel a part of their operation. And I just wanted to wonder, you know, ask, has there ever been letters of, you know, some sort of accommodation that those companies can get for doing that?
Indiana Disability Rights does not per se do that. However, there are organizations like the Indiana Association for Supporting People in Employment that do recognize employers that are doing above and beyond. The coalition that I mentioned is looking, Work to Include is looking for a couple of employers to spotlight in a webinar this month. October is National Disability Employment Awareness Month, which is why I'm here. I mean, it just coincided beautifully with the convention this time. And I was asked to come and talk to you about employment and some of the situations, you know, that I've been involved in, as well as the impact of COVID. One of the things that I was going to mention with COVID, like I said, is that people are being more creative about how to accommodate people with disabilities in employment. People are looking, employers are looking for qualified individuals who can kind of think creatively. And so this is an opportune time to be involved and encourage employment for people with disabilities. I've had about 35 to 40 years experience as a person with low vision, accessing technology and accessing accommodations at work. For myself, I did that for my daughter when she was in school, and I've been doing that for a long time, and it's something I enjoy doing.
Bonnie, thank you, and you wrap things up beautifully.